order, the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs. And I'm going to open a work session for introduction of committee bills. And before, at your place, we have seven. LC 3013, 1091, 3270, 3463, 1595, 2360, 3463. To entertain a motion to introduce these bills.
Yes.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we take LC 2360, 1595, 3463, 3270, 1091, 3013, and move them into as a committee bill to introduce them as such.
Representative Esquivel moves that we introduce 3013, 1091, 3270, 3463, 1595, 2360, and 3463 as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, we are introduced as committee bills. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2375. Go ahead.
Open the hearing on 2376 as well.
Okay, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2376 as well. And Janet, can you give us a summation on it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2375 would authorize the Department of Consumer and Business Services to revoke or suspend a manufactured structured dealer license or to place a dealer on probation if the dealer is assessed a civil penalty for an unlawful trade practice based on improper use of a purchase agreement, improper notification under a purchase agreement. It requires the department to consult with the Manufactured Structures and Parks Advisory Board before taking such action against a dealer. Mr. Chair, the items that are listed that must be contained in a purchase agreement for the sale of a manufactured structure are listed in current law, and they include various disclosures that are related to the price of the home, delivery, the loan fees, improvement requirements, and other costs. The statute currently makes failure to follow or to include the items in the agreement an unlawful trade practice. The Department of Justice enforces consumer fraud against the state's unlawful trade practices laws. But House Bill 2375 would authorize DCBS to take action against the dealer's license, which is not currently done under the statutes, if the dealer is assessed civil penalties for unlawful trade practices. And, Mr. Chair, House Bill 2376 deals with the same type of unlawful activity and would authorize the Department of Consumer and Business Services to impose civil penalties or to revoke, suspend, or place a manufactured home dealer on probation for misrepresentations to buyers or to lenders in home purchase agreements. And again, these activities, these misrepresentations are already illegal under current law, but they are not, the DCBS does not take action against a dealer's license for those activities. So both bills deal with the same type of activity but take differing approaches under the dealer's license and would require different things of the agency. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we did include with the 2376 a list of the statutes that are referred to by the bill and underline that some of the information that might be helpful to about those. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you have at your place already the oversized testimony from the Manufactured Housing Association.
Thank you, Janet. Could I have Don Miner, please? Certainly.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner here on behalf of
Oregon Manufactured Housing Association to speak in support of House Bills 2375 and 2376. I want to begin by thanking you for allowing these bills to be heard and to apologize for the large number of bills that are before you. That's not generally our style. But we find it necessary to just clarify some things that we thought had already been decided. And so that's the purpose for those bills. House Bill 2375 and 76 are consumer protection bills. Nothing more, nothing less. Lots of bills are brought before this legislature in the name of consumer protection. Sometimes those bills appear to do more to protect the proponents of the bills from competition than to protect consumers. That's not what these are. These are truly consumer protection bills. And these are very modest measures, and more should be done than is being proposed today. If I could, I'd like to digress a bit and give you a little bit of a historical background on why we're before you. The problem started in the 1990s when a number of manufactured home retailers began to engage in what we thought were very questionable business practices. Ourselves and Pat Schwach, who represents folks who live in manufactured home communities, rental parks, the consumer representative, we went to the Department of Justice and other state agencies and complained about these activities and asked that somebody intercede. Nothing was done. It turned out there was no real single agency that had all-encompassing authority over the manufactured housing industry. Now, there's nothing unique about manufactured housing. Most of the participants in this industry are honest. Like every other industry, though, they have some folks who sometimes get across the line. And when they go across the line, they truly hurt consumers. It hurts them in their home ownership. Some of you know some folks that were hurt by these business practices. Well, the business practice I'm referring to, continued unabated until in 1999, the Oregonian began running a series of stories, front page stories, that went for more than a year. I've given you a copy of just one of those stories. Could just look at a couple of quotes in there. And Evan Whitaker was one of the people quoted. He was, to my knowledge, the only person who enforcement activity was taken against. He was, as I understand, he signed an assurance of voluntary compliance that prohibited him from participating in this industry for a period of 5 years or so, thereabouts. But he says, "We did shake our heads on many occasions and said, boy, this is going to be ugly in a few years." Now I've given you a copy of a graph that shows the manufactured housing share of single-family housing and total housing. The industry usually averages in the 20-30% range. It's down right now to about 12% of single-family housing and less than that of total housing. The result of these unethical business practices was to cause lenders to find that they had financed homes that weren't as represented, and lenders ran for the doors. Consequently, consumers found themselves unable to sell their homes to people who needed financing. Tens and tens of millions of dollars of homeowner equity was lost in this state, and thousands of homes repossessed in this state. Our industry was severely damaged. In that that fall off, it cost us about 1,500 jobs in production facilities. These are assembly line jobs. They don't count the suppliers who lost their jobs, the clerical support, the sales support, none of that. These are just manufacturing jobs lost in this state alone. Our payroll went from $102 million for production workers to $67 million in that from 1998 to 2003. The industry is now beginning to recover from this setback, and we're doing it by earning the trust of our consumers. Now, this Oregonian story that I gave, you don't need to read the whole story to get a flavor for it. Just look in the faces of these individuals. Just look at their faces, and you can see the heartbreak. Now, as painful as this series of articles were, They serve some value. They describe the problem. If I could just read one of the highlighted paragraphs, Mr. Chair. This is titled Easy Laws. Manufactured housing production is heavily regulated for quality and safety. And Oregon sets tough home installation standards, but sales, lending, and advertising practice are only minimally regulated, and overworked regulatory agencies have trouble keeping up. Now, they also suggested a solution that down there at the bottom, and it's sort of it's called the Nevada approach, where you consolidate all the regulatory functions dealing with manufactured housing in a single state agency. And that suggestion, actually, we took that to heart, and we carried forward with that, as you'll see later. Now, Attorney General Hardy Myers convened a task force to look at this problem in 2000. He involved more than 150 Oregonians. There were state agencies, city and county government, consumers, industry, etc. And they produced a report, and I've given you a copy of that report on what steps should be taken, things that should be done. I won't go through that other than to give you a copy of that. Many of those recommendations found their way into Oregon law during the 2001 legislative session. Representative Carl Wilson chaired, I think it was the Rules Committee, that put many of those bills into law. And I remember earlier in the session, Department of Justice came forward asking for some clarifications of some laws. Those were those laws. The 2001 legislature also then appointed an interim task force to look if there wasn't a better way to regulate manufactured housing than through the DMV process. DMV, at that time and through this May 1st, regulates the titling of the homes, but also has the responsibility to regulate manufactured home retailers. Well, that interim task force reported back to the 2003 legislature with a recommendation that the DMV functions be transferred from DMV to the Department of Business and Consumer Services and the Building Codes Division of that department. They were chosen because DCPS regulates financial affairs. They regulate the banking division, mortgage brokers, etc. So they have some experience in that regard. Also, the Building Code Division regulates the construction of manufactured homes, actually keeps tallies of the homes that are sold, tracks them through their own process. They regulate the people who install the manufactured homes. They regulate the actual standards under which they'll be installed. They regulate how the homes are stored from the time they're manufactured until they're delivered to a consumer's lot to make sure they're not damaged in that process. They regulate disputes that consumers have with installers, manufacturers, and in some cases dealers. So when this was done, we contemplated an all-encompassing program, something like the Nevada model. Our vision was something, and supporters of that measure, their vision was a program where dealers would be licensed to get that license, would do a basic criminal background check to see if they had a history of financial fraud, things such as embezzlement, forgery, theft, things like that. We also envisioned a program that would have a modest amount of education, essentially a rules book that we would write or we'd help the state write, that would tell dealers how do you title a home in Oregon, what does it take to get a trip permit, do you have to pay the taxes before you move it, really basic stuff, and then a modest open book test. But then, more to the point, an enforcement mechanism. That the agency would adopt rules prohibiting certain kinds of deceptive conduct, advertising, telling a consumer you can get a free trip to Hawaii if you buy this house without informing them that's built into the sales price of that house, things like that. We aren't looking at some kind of FBI type thing. It was just a modest program. Again, these recommendations went forward. They became Senate Bill 468, which passed that last legislature and takes effect this May 1. Now, in drafting that, the agency, and working with the agency, it was decided to not put a lot of the detail in statute as to how this would be done, but rather to leave it to the rulemaking process. I've given you a copy of the what I think is the operative language of the statute. If I could just read a couple sentences.
Question.
the Department of Business and Consumer Services shall adopt reasonable rules for regulating manufactured structures, dealers, and dealerships. And these rules shall establish standards of practice and conduct for manufactured structures dealers. It also gave them authority to adopt rules regulating salespeople who sell manufactured homes. Now, we agree with the agency that that's, you know, something that should be done down the road, but the licensing and more strict regulation of dealers, we believe, should be done now. I also gave you a copy of a draft of the rules that Building Codes Division is proposing to implement Senate Bill 468, which again goes into effect May 1 of this year. If you look at it, rules are not much there in terms of business practices or ethics or anything such as that. The most that you can really see there is towards the end, violations. What it based my reading of that is, if somebody else takes action, if another agency or a court takes action against building or a dealer, that Building Codes Division could suspend, revoke, or place on probation the dealer. But it doesn't have the agency itself taking the action or proposing the rules. It's just if the dealer violates somebody else's law or somebody else's rules, action can be taken. And I don't believe that that goes far enough to address the problems that are highlighted in the Oregonian stories or in the Attorney General's report. Just know they're there. Now, we understand that Building Codes Division is contemplating or is discussing giving Department of Justice authority to enforce laws, the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. Department of Justice already has that authority, and there are some specifics relating to manufactured home dealers in the UTPA, but not very much. This approach is kind of like the Construction Contractors Board saying, you have to have a contractor's license. We're not going to have many rules as to what you have to do to keep that license. But if you violate the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, CCB will punish you. You do that with a real estate agency. Actually, if you were to adopt that model, you could eliminate a lot of regulatory agencies and fold it all into the Department of Justice. Our experience has been they don't have the personnel or the resources to do that. They're really not a regulatory agency. They're more of an enforcement body. Our intention with House Bills 2375 and 76 is to add some detail to the statute. It's very modest, and as I said earlier, I think much more should be done. Both bills give the agency until 2007 to adopt rules. And there are really two models in those bills. 2375 is kind of the model I just mentioned earlier, where we'll just delegate it to the Department of Justice. And again, it would allow Building Codes Division to impose a penalty if the Department of Justice has sanctioned a dealer because he used a purchase agreement that didn't contain the disclosures, the consumer protection disclosures, already required by Oregon law. That bill also requires that the Building Codes Division consult with the advisory board before doing that. The reason we put that in there is in this whole transition from the Department of Motor Vehicles to Building Codes Division, quite an undertaking if you think about it. It's a historic change in the way we regulate this industry. Not once has that agency consulted with its own advisory board. The advisory board appointed DCBS, an advisory board that is comprised of consumers, local government officials, and industry. And so we'd like to have that built into this law to begin a process of having the agency work with the advisory board, with citizens, having citizen involvement. Actually, in this state where we pride ourselves on, you know, citizen involvement or open government, I'm surprised to see that these rules have gone forward without any citizen involvement. Enough said on that. House Bill 2376, as your committee administrator described, essentially tells Building Codes Division to adopt rules so that it prohibiting certain misrepresentations and punishing dealers who engage in those misrepresentations. That's the different model that I mentioned. The type of misrepresentations we're talking about aren't really sophisticated or something that'll be really hard to ferret out. It's if a dealer tells a consumer that he can't get a mortgage unless he buys credit life insurance or credit disability insurance, or if he falsifies the consumer's employment history to a lender, or tells a bank that the consumer has made a down payment when such is not the case, or he's told a consumer that these thousands of dollars that I'm charging you are government fees when that is not the case, that BCD would be required to adopt rules punishing that type of behavior. And again, I don't think it's particularly sophisticated or hard to discover. When it occurs, there's always somebody that knows about it, and those somebodies often come forward. Sometimes it's me. I will call government agencies and tell them that what we know. We'll tell them the names of dealers, the consumer's name, people who are injured. It's also important to know that this program is all fee-supported. The industry is, and its consumers pay for these services. Many of you may remember Ballot Measure 32 that was just passed. It will allow, it amended the Oregon Constitution to ensure that fees paid by consumers when they title their manufactured home go to support this program. So there's adequate revenue to do this, is I guess my point there. When we supported Senate Bill 468 last session, it was our intention to have this all-encompassing program. We thought it was going to be a good fit for the Building Codes Division. We supported the legislature assigning Building Codes Division these responsibilities to regulate dealers. Both DCBS and BCD representatives were involved in those discussions, and they didn't oppose them. Now, they weren't wholehearted in embracing them, but no one ever said, no, we won't do this. I guess what we need now is just to find out where we stand. What are the intentions of the agencies in this legislature in this regard? Manufactured homes are an important source of affordable housing for Oregonians. Used to be as much as 28%, 30% of single-family housing. It's too important of a resource to let run haphazardly, to not regulate, and not treat consumers fairly. I guess we'd just like to not repeat the mistakes of our past. We'd like to have a process in place so that as the industry rebounds from the severe downturn it has seen since 1998, that these individuals who created the problem in the first place not filter back into the industry. And we think we need a robust regulatory process to prevent that. And that will conclude my remarks. And I apologize for the length.
Thank you, Don. Greg, would you like to...
Please.
Have some testimony here?
Thank you. Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving me a couple minutes. I'll make my comments brief. My name is Greg Harmon. I'm from Portland. My company is Commonwealth Real Estate Services, and we manage manufactured home communities and own them in Oregon and Washington, about 84 communities and 11,000 home sites, two-thirds of which are in the state of Oregon between Portland and Medford. I'm a second-generation person in this industry. My dad started in the industry in 1964. I've been in the industry 35 years. I'm former president of the Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. After nearly a decade of frustration watching improper sales practices go unchecked, and only after the Oregonian ran a series of front page articles in 1999 and 2000 with such headlines as Manufactured Promises, did Attorney General Hardy Myers form a Manufactured Housing Task Force, of which I was a member. We met at the Aldersgate Conference Center out in Turner on January 3rd and again on January 24th of 2001. That's been over 4 years ago now. There was nearly 150 people in attendance. And in February, the Attorney General published his recommendations as a result of those meetings, which included increased education within our industry, licensing salespeople, background and criminal checks for required or to be required for licensed dealer applications, increased disclosures and transparencies in the purchase process, to adopt better advertising rules, to create a sticker price type uniform pricing such as in automobiles, to educate first-time home buyers, and about 10 other requirements I won't go into for the financing and disclosures and transparencies within financing. After all this time and misery we've been through, very little has been accomplished. And the only meaningful changes so far that have been instigated as a result of the task force have been instigated by us, the industry, not by government or any regulatory body, including what's happened so far as Don outlined with Senate Bill 468, which moves us from DMV to PCD. Financing's dried up in our industry. Lenders don't want to finance manufactured homes in Oregon anymore. In California, by contrast, in comparison, the toughest state in the nation to sell a manufactured home, where they require licensed salespeople, background checks on dealers and retailers, and all closings closing in escrow, business is booming. It's the hottest market in America for manufactured housing, and it's largely because they brought credibility and respectability back into our industry. We want to be credible and respected again, and we're willing to earn it. We don't want to just be housed at DCBS. We want to be regulated by DCBS and BCD. And we want them to embrace our willingness to change, and we want them to remember how this all came about in the first place. Otherwise, it's been a long and costly series of smoke and mirrors, or as my dad would say, big hat, no cattle. Consumers are no better off than they were prior to the AG's task force. No better off at all. It's frustrating to our industry, all of us, whom I speak for today. And it's frustrating for consumers after all they've been through too. Both the clear understanding and the unwritten spirit of 468 and our move from DMV to BCD is not being honored, in my opinion, by BCD. And now they've forced us to introduce numerous pieces of legislation in order to be heard. If you think about it, what industry brings more regulation onto itself? What industry asks government to get more involved? And since when does a state agency respond with, we're going to do as little as we possibly can? I have to ask myself, who really manufactured the promises? We want to improve our business. We really do. And we want to protect our consumers, honestly. But we can't do it without your help. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I hope you take my comments very, very seriously because we take them very seriously. Thank you for your time to testify. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Greg. How many people are employed within your industry? You know, just a ballpark figure.
One number I have now is in our assembly lines about 1,900 people. I can get you those numbers. Those are all known.
Not very many, but that's at present, 1,900 people now.
That's right now.
At their peak here a few years back.
About 3,500 in the production facilities. Now that doesn't count the folks who supply the materials or the sales staffs or the support staffs or any of that. Much of that is known. The dealers employed thousands of folks as well, and that's all been reduced at least by half. I have those numbers at my office. I just didn't bring them with me. Substantial. Oregon is the 10th largest producer of manufactured homes in the United States. It's a very big industry here.
What did Senate Bill 468 do? Tell me.
Senate Bill 468 took the responsibilities that DMV had to title manufactured homes, to keep track of ownerships, and to regulate dealers, and took it from DMV and gave it to the Building Codes Division. That was instigated by then Representative Bruce Starr, now Senator Starr. But you question, does it make sense to have manufactured homes in Building Codes Division? Good question.
And that is to become totally effective on May 1st, 2005.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Escobar.
Yes, how many, do you have any feel, Don, on how many sales associates you have? Because it seems to me that's where a lot of your problem originates, is where it's the the time and the place when you're crafting contractual agreements as well as agreements, and lack of disclosures or disclosures with the public is with your sales associates, which in turn work for obviously a dealer of some sort. Now, what you're saying is right now we are regulating kind of sort of the dealer, but we're not really regulating the sales associate. Is that what we're saying here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, actually, we're about the only regulations that are imposed on dealers is that they pay a $545 or $40-some fee for 3 years, and that they produce a bond for $40,000. And not a lot more than that, that they keep records, that they allow those records to be looked at by the state of Oregon. They're required to use trip permits when they move homes. But again, it's not regulation in the sense that a real estate agency is regulated, and salespeople aren't regulated whatsoever. There's no record kept of who they are except for possibly employment purposes, but no regulation whatsoever of salespeople.
Follow up?
Yeah, I assume that means that there's no accountability on ethics at all.
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, I mean, there is, in terms of his employment relationship with his employer. And again, the industry right now is sparkling clean from what I can see of it. So he is accountable to his employer. But if the employer is no better than the I'm not sure I need to say that.
Maybe you better not go.
Follow up.
But what I'm saying is, I, Joe Public, have an ethics complaint against you. I have no recourse.
Mr. Chair, if the consumer has, Representative Escobar, if the consumer is injured, he can complain to the Department of Justice. If there has been a violation of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, he can complain to the DMV if there's been a violation of their laws. He can sue in court. But again, that there's not a lot of rules that you can point fingers to. I mean, laws of fraud apply. It's not a very regulated industry.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. 2 years ago we had the transition, if I remember right, and I thought, as in everything we do in this building, that we were bringing more happiness to the world. Mm-hmm. Apparently that isn't the case. And I'm sorry to hear about the decline of the numbers in your manufacturing industry, because that's something we certainly want to turn around, and hopefully we'll do something in this room to help do that. Mm-hmm. This session. But and I always applaud any industry that comes here asking for more regulation, because that is not the climate we live in, and certainly not what you read about in the paper very often. My question is, anytime you say the word more, you might as well add the word money on it. Mr. Harmon or Mr. Miner, Don, if you all want more regulation, which I applaud you for asking for, because I want to arrest and throw in jail any lying, thieving, deadbeat vermin out there, are you willing to pay more to provide your industry with that service?
If I may answer, Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler. Now, we're not looking for more regulation for the sake of more regulation. No. We're looking for some very basic things here. And of course, the industry does pay and is willing to pay. And again, ballot measure 32 that passed this past November brings more revenue. It's revenue consumers were already paying. Title their home, only it was being pulled off. Anything that DMV didn't need for the actual titling process was pulled off and used to build county parks. So I believe the revenue is there or will be there. And if it's not, then this is such a basic need that it's irresponsible for the regulatory authorities, regulating agencies, to not ask for fees to support the program. And it would be irresponsible for us to not support those fee increases. We are willing to pay.
Representative Holy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking through this. About how many dealers are there in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, there's probably about 100 real serious ones, but there's probably 300 or so, maybe 400, that have licenses to sell onesies and twosies.
About 300. and they pay $540 each for a 3-year period?
That's correct.
Do they pay any other fees or monies to DCBS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, there'll be permits associated with trip permits. They'll pay those fees. The bulk of the fees paid by the industry are paid by the manufacturers of the homes, but installers also pay fees. So if a retailer is an installer, he'd pay fees. When he sells homes, there are fees built into the price of that home as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Could I have Corey Sessinger and Mark Long, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. For the record, I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and with me is Mark Long, who is the Administrator of the Building Codes Division. I'm here today to offer comments on both House Bill 2375 and House Bill 2376, which would, as Mr. Miner has said, give the Department additional responsibility for regulating trade practices and also would increase the specificity of that regulation of manufactured structure dealers. Our agency is a consumer protection agency, and if there are problems in this area that require additional regulation, it would certainly be within the scope of our mission to take that on. We don't have sufficient information to be able to offer an opinion whether there are sufficient problems to require that additional information. But if you conclude that there are and want to move forward in this area, our concern, frankly, is to be able to provide the service and to do the regulation and enforcement in a way that's the most efficient and effective and that fits in with the skill sets that we have. And as Mr. Miner said, our agency in a number of areas does regulate financial practices of various industries. Mortgage lending and banks were a couple that Mr. Miner mentioned, insurance. In Building Codes Division, however, that is not their major focus. Their major focus is construction safety. And as Mr. Miner said, when Senate Bill 468 was passed last session, the desire was to locate that within building codes because building codes does have some functions associated with the manufactured housing, manufactured structures industry. But one of our challenges is if this bill were to pass, we would need to look at, from a department-wide basis, how best to match up the skill sets to deliver the services efficiently and effectively, because regulation of financial transactions and trade practices, is not the core focus of the Building Codes Division. It fits probably better in some of our other areas. So I wanted to flag for you that is an area we would look at if these, particularly 2376, were to move forward, which would assign us some much broader substantive areas of responsibility. We do think that a preferable approach may be to rely on the agency within state government that already has a substantial role in consumer protection in this area, and that is the Department of Justice. We have had some very preliminary discussions with the Department of Justice, and of course I don't want to speak for them with respect to their position, but our concern would be to avoid duplication of effort between the two agencies, and again to try to use the skill sets to deliver the services most efficiently and effectively. The concept in 2375 is much more aligned with that approach. That is, it would continue to have the substantive regulation and unfair trade practices enforcement as it is, but would allow the department to take licensing action based on the work done at DOJ or through other means. And we would be happy to sit down with DOJ. In fact, we'd like to sit down with DOJ and work through some of those issues if that's the approach that the committee chooses to take. We have also been advised by DOJ that there are some technical issues with that bill as drafted, and of course we'd be happy to look at those as well. So really, that's what we're here to say today. We always try, whenever the legislature assigns us a responsibility, to carry it out in a way that's in keeping with the letter and the spirit of the law, and that meets the needs of the stakeholders involved. To the extent that the stakeholders are not fully satisfied here, that's certainly something we regret. This is a new program for us. It does go into effect in May 2005. It's a large new program, and we have taken an incremental sort of first things first approach to make sure that we can get the basics of the program in place and then continue to work on some of these larger issues as we move forward. Both Mark and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Did you have any? You're there to answer questions.
You bet.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Considering the resources you have right now and we're projected to have, whatever that might be, and this went into law, is there how much more staff would you need? How much more work would you have to do? Would we need to raise fees? Do you feel that, and this, there's a string of questions, do you feel that the stakeholders and the money that they're putting into your department right now is doing what that fee's meant to do? Is there more money needed to do that? Yes. I would like all those things addressed here. Please.
Maybe take a shot at it.
Go ahead, since you've got the current information.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, for the record, Mark Long, Administrator, Building Codes Division. A couple things to point out. The program did start coming over to us as of last session, Senate Bill 468. It goes up and running in 2005. So we have projections, but I'm pretty careful not to count my chickens before they hatch, and also not to begin adding programs or adding staffing until we understand the full impact. Specific to these bills, the department's looked at it, and on a department basis, we think we're going to need to add staff. We put a target date of December 1, 2006, one FTE to carry out the functions of the bills that are before you today. Okay. As far as whether the funds that will be paid, because I haven't received any direct funds from dealers or consumers yet, we're only in the process of startup and working through DMV, Department of Transportation, to get up and running. I can't tell you. You know, our estimates show, just to give you a little bit of background, we're actually spending more than the, let me start over. In order to get this going, to move the program over, we didn't have any money to do that. So Department of Transportation, as part of the Ways and Means process last year, provided some revenue for us to deal with our startup costs. Because one of the things that I think you should know, the first and foremost piece of Senate Bill 468 required us to take on the titling and registration of manufactured homes. That's when somebody goes and buys the home. So we put together a large computer system, our largest investment of the computer system to date that I'm aware of, to create an interconnection between our agency, lenders, dealers, counties, consumers, all that web-based, track information, all those things. That's what we've been focusing on. We're spending more than the dollars that we've received from DMV. We'll be in the hole this biennium, and then we expect to come out of the hole next biennium, assuming the estimates that we've been getting are accurate. So I can tell you what it costs to do this. I can tell you we're in the hole today. I can tell you next biennium we expect to come out of it. But they are, again, estimates and proposals based on information from a couple of years ago. So that's my best shot. Did I miss something, Representative Schaffner?
No, you're doing good.
Follow up.
Thank you. And then I'm confident Mr. Harmon and his family and all of the people in Don's Association are honest business men and women. What I'd like to do is for you to describe a scenario where someone isn't honest but has a license to do this, and exactly what your department's responsible for, and when it would leave your ability to take care of it, or even Ms. Streisinger, forgive me, department, and would go over to the Department of Justice. How does all that work? Because we got a whole bunch of people involved here, and how does that all go together? Can you just quickly, in a couple of minutes, give me a scenario where that would be necessary?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, again, I'll do my best. This is a new program for us, and so all the pieces are not in play yet, and I think that that's some of the issue that's out there. Because, again, this last year and some change, we have spent making sure this interrelationship of the purchase of the home is up and running. My goal to staff was to make sure that absolutely no consumer got caught up in a maze between DCBS, Department of Transportation, other lending institutions, and all those kinds of things to make the infrastructure work properly. As far as how this might work in the future, my understanding is under current law, because this hasn't gone into effect yet, there are standards under the Uniform Trade Practices Act that the Department of Justice has authority over, and that Department of Motor Vehicles will be us, but does have authority over. How it relates, what are some of the issues, I don't know. I can tell you that in our administrative rules that we proposed, and you may have a copy of them, we'll take action against a dealer's license when we get the program. If there's a conviction of a Class A misdemeanor or any felony arising out of actions related to the selling, brokering, trading, or exchange of a manufactured structure, if there's conviction of an unlawful practice under the, I understand, the Uniform Trade Practices Act, failure to maintain the required bond insurance or letter of credit, and a pattern of violations under our statute that would indicate our need to revoke or suspend the license. So we are talking about the authorities between Department of Justice, what they do under their umbrella. We have the licensing, and as Director Streisinger indicated, under 2375, it sets up that kind of connection so that if one takes an action, the other, since I have the license, then I would revoke. The specifics and how we would investigate and how we do all that, I'm unclear on to this yet.
And
Mr. Chair, my question is, is Department of Motor Vehicles coming here today to talk about...
No, they're not on the schedule. No.
Okay. Thank you.
I think we need them. Is there any other questions? Representative Escobar.
Sorry, I was out, but we're doing our pair thing, you know. But, by the way, Southern Oregon is strong on pairs.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing here, and of course I'm sorry for being remiss not being here through your testimony, but what I'm seeing here is I'm seeing two different issues. I really am. I'm seeing a regulatory process for the manufacturing part, and then I'm also seeing a section here on consumer protection with a licensing, maybe a potential licensing structure and ethical accountability structure here. I'm not sure they both should be under one roof. I'm really not convinced at this point. I'm not sure that this other part that has to do with consumer protection, potential licensing and schooling and education, and ethics accountability shouldn't be separate someplace else. What are your thoughts on that, Court?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, that's how we see it, actually. We do see those functions as distinct. We understand that from the industry standpoint and from the consumer standpoint, there's an advantage to having one place to go. But from and we want to serve that need, but we do see them as distinct programs with distinct skill sets, and that's one of the things we're struggling with, frankly, is does it make sense to try to run it as if those education, ethics, trade practices, consumer protection responsibilities are enhanced and assigned to us, does it make sense to try to use the same management structure and program people who have the expertise in the manufacturing side to suddenly become experts on the financial and trade practice side?
I think, though, I think they need maybe not even... It would be... And then the only thing I can really relate to that kind of relates to this is the contractors have their own board and their own disciplinary process. The realtors have their own board and own accountability and its own process. They are separate, yet they work in conjunction with one another with the end product. That's the only time they ever come together. And that's what I'm kind of seeing, what I'm seeing here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, yes, if you buy a house, you care about how the house is constructed, but you also care about the disclosures and the financial aspect of it. But you're quite right, those are regarded as two separate regulatory structures.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you. Thank you. Could I have Marilyn O'Dell, please?
Mr. Chair, I'm not Marilyn O'Dell. Okay. Marilyn O'Dell is here. She works with me. My name is Cheryl Pellegrini, for the record, and I would ask to testify in lieu of Ms. O'Dell.
Please do.
If that's okay. For the record, I'm Cheryl Pellegrini, Oregon Department of Justice, the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Consumer Protection Financial Fraud Section. I just wanted to provide a couple of comments just to clarify, because there have been some questions, about exactly what the role of the Department of Justice is here. First off, and you may recall, I provided testimony a couple of weeks ago, just an overview of what my section does. But first and foremost, the Department of Justice is not a regulatory agency. We are a law enforcement agency. And there's a difference there. We don't license. We don't set out ethical requirements for certain occupations or professions. That is left to boards and commissions that are created by the legislature. The function of the Department of Justice in this area is to enforce provisions of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act against all participants in the marketplace, including manufactured housing dealers. Now, there was a bill passed in the 2003 session. It is now codified as Oregon Revised Statute 646-608, and actually it is reproduced in large part in one of the bills that have been introduced by the Manufactured Housing Association, and that is House Bill 2376. What the statute currently does is it sets out specific prohibitions. There are certain things that manufactured housing dealers cannot do when they arrange financing for a buyer. And it's set out in the bill, and it's currently the law. We would take action under 648 is currently constructed through what we think is a drafting error. The Department of Justice has no authority at this point to enforce that provision. That is among the package of bills that have come before this committee that Ms. O'Dell has presented. It would give us that authority. But right now, we're without authority to enforce that. A private party can bring a lawsuit to enforce those provisions. In other areas, dealers are required to abide by the conditions set forth in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. They may not misrepresent the cost of a manufactured home, the reason or existence of a discount, the quality of a manufactured home, and all of the other conditions set up in 646-608 sub 1. Because we regulate the entire marketplace, our ability to respond to complaints by consumers in the manufactured housing field, it is largely a matter of resources for us. When complaints come in, we have screening criteria. We look at the severity of the complaints, the number, the dollar value, whether or not there is an action pending, or whether or not there is an administrative agency that has authority to take action in this area, and whether or not an action by that agency would achieve a substantially similar result to any action we would take, and other factors. We go through all of those factors before determining whether or not we should open a formal investigation and then take any formal enforcement action. There have been some actions against manufactured housing dealers. I'm sorry I didn't bring the statistics with me, but I certainly can provide that to you. But they have not, I think it's fair to say, been the actions against manufactured housing dealers have not made up a majority of the enforcement actions undertaken by the Department of Justice under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. We file actions against motor vehicle dealers, pharmaceuticals companies, telecommunications companies, I mean, any other participant in the marketplace. All by way of saying that to the extent that the Department of Justice can, through application of the laws it enforces, assist in providing some sort of oversight through enforcement actions which provide a deterrence to breaking the law, we are certainly willing to do so. Ms. Streisinger, the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I spoke last week about the potential for the Department of Justice to perhaps partner with the Department of Consumer and Business Services, but that would be for the purpose of providing perhaps an attorney position within the department whose focus would be to bring actions under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act against dealers. This is not, however, to say that it is a substitute for the sort of day-to-day regulation that the industry appears to be seeking. It would be one way to achieve that, but I would say it's not what they're before this committee asking for. I would also point out, this is just a technical issue, but it is one that should be addressed. In House Bill 2375, and in some of the director's comments, I just want to make sure that the committee understands to the extent that actions by the Department of Justice are resolved through entry by a business into an assurance of voluntary compliance. And I would tell you that we settle about 99% of our cases that way. We do not sue and go to trial and proceed to judgment. So for 99% of our cases, they're settled through an assurance. The Unlawful Trade Practices Act itself says that the fact that a business has entered into an assurance of voluntary compliance cannot be used as a basis for a finding of liability for any reason. So to the extent that House Bill 2375 would purport to base an administrative action on a person's having executed and entered into an assurance of voluntary compliance, I think that the bill conflicts with existing law, and I would say that we could probably adjust that, but I just wanted the committee to be aware of the fact that basing an administrative action on an enforcement action that ends in an assurance contravenes the whole purpose of entering into an assurance, which is no admission of liability, and the business has an opportunity to correct its behavior without a finding of liability and without suffering the consequence in another proceeding. So we'd have to be vigilant for that and look for other triggers if that's what the committee wanted to do.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Rick, finish off.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Pellegrini, sorry I was out. I came in mm-hmm. in the middle of one of your sentences. No, if on 2365, you say, if I heard you right, that you can already do that if it's brought forth by an individual, but the department can't, and the department has a bill allowing them? The no. Department of Consumer and Business Services. That would give them that authority? Did I hear you right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schauffler, House Bill 2375, one of the...
No, I'm 2376, I'm going to ask.
You said
65. Oh, 376.
You want to know about 2376?
If I heard you right, you said that an individual can already do that through you, but the Department of Consumer Business Services cannot. And did I hear they had a bill that would allow them to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schauffler, House Bill 2376, it essentially takes a provision that is already in the law uh-huh. as it's ORS 646-648, which is enforceable by a private action only. It takes that, and House Bill 2376 would make it grounds for a disciplinary action mm-hmm. that the Department of Consumer and Business Services could take. Yes. That's I think, the effect of 2376.
Oh, right, I got you there. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm clear. Just let me follow up real quickly. But you did not say the department had a bill that would do that, too.
Mr. Chair.
Not your department.
Representative Sharp.
Your department.
No, I.
Oh, okay.
If I did, I didn't mean it.
All right.
Do you have another question?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Shuffler, the Department of Justice had a bill that's already passed out of this committee, and I think that's what you were...
Oh,
you
that were would give... I'm sorry. Yes.
Gives the Department of Justice the authority.
That's what
And
I
that
heard.
Was a...
Okay.
Has already passed the House.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Jared Rodfunk, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jared Broadfoot here today representing the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council, the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association, Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors National Association, and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, to testify in opposition to the bills that are on the schedule today collectively. And I won't come back up and testify, but just to let you know, we'll be testifying in as a package. What I've handed out to the committee is the first page is a membership of the Construction Industry Policy Advisory Committee. That is a committee with of the construction industry at Building Codes Division. You can see the membership there. And the next page is a report that was mandated by the last legislature on as a budget note to DCVS's budget. And basically, we were told out to, we put this Construction Industry Policy Advisory Committee together, the industry working with Building Codes, to identify what the priorities of the Building Codes Division ought to be. And then we were supposed to come back and report, and actually Building Codes was the one who had to come back and report that. If you'll notice on page 3 of the handout that I handed out, we went through about a year and a half process to really look through all of this, and like I said, all the folks that were on that front page attended the meetings they could, and we got everyone's involvement there. We recommended that the Building Codes Division focus its resources on mission-critical priorities is what we named them, and they were maintain and consistently enforce a statewide building code, certify local building officials, oversight of local jurisdictions, retain dispute resolution services to ensure consistent statewide building code enforcement and reasonable fee for local jurisdiction services, continue licensing function and enforcement, retain the prefabricated building inspection program, and provide training to ensure statewide consistent code compliance and enforcement. We have worked long and hard as across the construction industry to provide the Building Codes Division with our best recommendations of what they ought to be focusing on. Licensing, compliance, public safety are all encapsulated in those recommendations. And we feel that this package of bills is a 180-degree turn from that direction, which we've worked so hard to finally figure out for the Building Codes Division. And it is a little we are a little bit concerned that none of the bills that are before you today were taken through the Construction Industry Policy Advisory Committee, like most all of them are done. So the construction industry can have a chance to weigh in and say this is, you know, whether we think it's going to negatively affect the Building Codes Division or their mission or not. We do feel that these bills do that because they don't meet with this focus and with these priorities. So as a whole, you can see where we're coming from after working so hard across the industry and working so hard on the CPAC group with all of these members to finally figure out and come back to the legislature and say, this is where we want to move forward from here and this is what we're going to focus on. And then to have bills like this that come forward that change that mission. We do not feel that,
Chair.
Corey, oh, go ahead.
Representative Kitts.
Jerry, just for clarification, I look at CPAC similar as I would look at something along the lines of MLAC in the structure that it's set up. Is there any requirement for any one of these members to go before the CPAC advisory committee and get some type of a checkoff, or is this simply something, I know that that's the case with like the MLAC, you know, they don't bring those bills before us unless they've gone through the MLAC process, and that's the unsaid rule basically that says unless it's gone through MLAC, no. Is that the kind of the unsaid rule here, or is this just simply an advisory you know, committee that's been set up?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kitts, there is no requirement that we've built into CPAC to bring bills forward, but as a courtesy, and that's really one of the things that we set that CPAC up to do, was to bring legislative issues or issues that affected building codes or the construction industry forward and say, that, you know, this is what we are looking at to get feedback from the other groups. Obviously, you know, these bills certainly affect what time and effort that the Building Codes Division can spend focusing on not only those priorities, those mission critical priorities, but other functions that they do across all the programs that they oversee.
If I could follow up, so I just for clarification, the Manufactured Housing Association isn't in any kind of violation by bringing these bills forward. It's within their scope and their realm to do so.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, that's correct. So, to wrap up, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time, but like I said, we're very concerned that when looking at the Building Codes Division and their functions that these bills don't fit. And after the Senate bill last session, I believe it was 468, it's been mentioned before, after the portions of the manufactured structures program that were brought over were put into that. I mean, that program, as we've heard today, doesn't take effect until the implementation date is until May 1st of this year. And the other concern, you know, that we would have also of having building codes strapped with more changes to a program that hasn't even been implemented yet. So with that, I'll close and be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
You know, Janet asked me a question. You know, we heard testimony that it would take one FTE additional. You know, it seems like that's an awful lot. They're throwing a lot of stuff out of sync here if there's only one additional person required to do it.
Well, if let me clarify, is it, can you clarify maybe what...
Oh, what year one? No,
yeah.
My question was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seemed like in this whole process I heard testimony a little while ago that they need one more person, one more FTE to be able to implement all of this here. It seems like that if only one person involved in it, that there's a lot of disruption and disconnect being taking place. By this here, and it just surprised me. That's more of a comment than a question.
Yeah, and certainly with the testimony of the Mr. Chair of the one more FTE, there's also obviously going to be some folks that are currently on staff that are going to have to be doing work as well, as far and especially the director. And you know, like I said, we're concerned about the focus and all the work that we've put in for so long to make sure that the Building Codes Division is keeping that focus. And like I said, we don't feel that these bills are coincide with that.
Any other questions? Thank you, Jared, for your testimony. It's obvious, committee, we're not going to get through all these bills before floor session here in a few minutes. I'd like to add, Don, could you come back up, please? And
I bet he's more than happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I see you furiously writing a lot of notes over there. Can you help answer some of the questions that Ben asked?
I would, Mr. Chair. Do you have specific questions? Or?
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. Don, as far as the bill that would allow the Department of Justice to take go after some of these folks, is that helping you get to where you and your clients want to be? Is that going to be of help to you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler. You know, I was aware of that drafting error in the bill, and I assume that that's something that would be fixed. That in 2375, that an assurance of voluntary compliance can't be used as admission for another action. although I was aware of that drafting error, I thought, well, you just simply delete that. I hadn't thought through the implications of that. That's essentially, and I'm not all that familiar with their processes, but Ms. Pellegrini said that about 97% of their disputes are resolved in that manner. The person I referred to in the Oregonian article, the only person sanctioned, that's what it was. And my understanding, I'm sure this is probably an awkward way of phrasing it, is a person says, I'm not admitting I did it. I promise never to do it again, and here's some money to make it go away. If that's 97% of the resolution disputes that DOJ has with people violating the UTPA, it probably isn't going to be helpful at all. Because the concept there was if DOJ takes action against a wrongdoer, then building codes would also inflict a penalty. Couldn't be done. The way, as I understand it, couldn't be done in 97%. So it probably isn't a good model, if I understood the testimony correctly.
Thank you. We got about 5 minutes before we have to be out of here. Don, while I got you there, could I get you to, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 25, 27, and 2389, and give us just a quick overview of what those are, and then we'll bring them back for...
House Bill 2389 would prohibit the Building Codes Division from outsourcing the inspection of homes as they're being built in manufactured home factories. The state of Oregon has provided that service since the 1960s. Maybe before, I don't know when it's been, they can go back to 62, but for sure since 69. They currently enforce the federal building standards in the factories. They also coordinate with the federal government consumer disputes with the production of the home. We have a concern that they're going to eliminate that function, and we'd just like to know where we stand in that regard. That was 2389. The thumbnail on 2527 is if the Building Codes Division is not going to be able to, if they want to outsource that, if they're going to get out of that business, if they don't want to carry forward on the what we thought was an understanding with the dealer regulatory process, maybe it's time to just to spin it off, send it its own way, make it a separate state agency, an all-encompassing agency, such as is done in California and Nevada. And that's my thumbnail on both those.
Okay. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
And I'm going to... close the public hearing on House Bill 2375, 2376, 2389, and 2527. That was a mouthful. And I open a work session for the introduction of committee bills. I have.
One more.
Okay. Janet, what's the number?
LC, Mr. Chair, LC 2951, and it's at the request of Ask Me Council 75, and Kate, we have copies now, so Katie's passing those out, so an additional legislative council draft.
Ms. 2971?
2951.
51, thank you. Mr. Chair?
Representative Kitts.
Are you looking for a motion for
all
the aforementioned?
No, we got them done. We just need to
just
get
2951. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2951 be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Kitts moves that LC 2951 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's introduced.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Janet.
There's a letter introduced for the record from the City of Portland, Deputy City Attorney on House Bill 2527. That was just handed out. We'll enter that for the record on House Bill 2527.
Thank you, Dan. Anything else? And we'll bring these bills, we'll bring them all back and we get them rescheduled.
Perfect.
And with that, we'll be adjourned.